Hello, my name is Judith Kahn, and I am the next guest on Screen and Beyond.
On Screen and Beyond, an inside look into the entertainment world featuring interviews with people from the movie, TV, and music industry, news on upcoming TV and DVD releases, and the rumor mill. And now, here's the host of On Screen and Beyond, Brian Zemrak.
I am back for another edition of On Screen and Beyond. I'm your host, Brian Zemrak. This is episode 655 of On Screen and Beyond, the show that keeps you updated on what's coming your way as far as upcoming new movies, remakes, sequels, and TV and movie DVD releases, as well as our interview segment with a guest from the movie, TV, or music industry. This week on Screen and Beyond, our guest is Judith Kahn. She was on Valerie's Family, All's Fair, Ferris Bueller, and Multiplicity, and so many other TV shows, and she was on stage and everything else. And Judith's going to be joining us here on Screen and Beyond in just a few minutes, so I hope you'll stick around for that. And it is continuing the strike here. It's going on the actors and the writers. Thank goodness right now, at the moment, the writers are in talks, and I think what's going to happen is The CEOs are working on that one first, and then they're going to move on to the other one. We'll see what happens. Not sure what's going to go on, but we do know that this season is probably going to be pretty much a no-go and won't be that great. Some shows are continuing on, and hopefully those are the ones that some of the ones that you like. And someday we'll get back to having all our other shows come our way, and of course new ones too. So, anyways, we'll see what happens with that. But we've got a interesting show coming up here on Screen and Beyond with remakes, prequels, and sequels and everything else. So why don't we get right into that? We got to find out what's going on. Oh, I did want to mention, though, that if you have a suggestion for a guest here at Screen and Beyond, email it to me at feedback@onscreenandbeyond.com. And that way I'll get it, and I'll be able to look that person up and see if I can connect with them some way. And if I can, hopefully we can get them to come on the show. And if they're an actor, it's going to be some people can talk about their past, present, and future. Others cannot. So it depends on the situation. So hopefully we'll see what we can do about getting all kinds of people here on Screen and Beyond. Got some great guests coming up in the future here. We're scheduling ahead of time here, so looks good. And I've got some more people that have just accepted. Some of them are from suggestions from you. Thank you for that. It helps me because, like I say, when I'm trying to think of people to have on the show, certain people come up and I'll start looking for them and everything, see if I can make a connection with a publicist or whatever. But sometimes I don't think of the people that you think of. So, you may have watched shows that I didn't watch or, listen to music that I didn't. So I always love to hear your feedback because it helps me a lot to get people on the show. So hope you'll turn around and help us do that and get more and more people here on Screen and Beyond. Do me a favor if you would turn around also and, download all the episodes of On Screen and Beyond. Tell a friend about On Screen and Beyond. If you're on Spotify, you can turn around and get involved with our polls and things like that that we put up. So that helps. And also leave a review if you can. A 5-star review goes a long way on any of the podcast providers that you have. And if you're getting your the show from one of those podcast providers, it helps get us up in the rankings. So thank you for that if you can do that for us. And like I say, download, tell a friend. Those are the big ways to get things going. And that's it. Time now for remakes, sequels, and prequels right here on Screen and Beyond.
Please hang up and try again.
Remakes, sequels, and prequels. Well, Good Burger 2, the sequel to the 90s film, will premiere on Paramount Plus on November 22nd. November 17th, Trolls Band Together with Anna Kendrick and Justin Timberlake comes to theaters. And Saw 10 gets into theaters on September 29th, and that's Saw X, they show, but Saw 10. And Pet Sematary Bloodlines crawls into theaters on October 6th as a prequel to the original 1989 film, and also the 1992 sequel, and the 2019 remake. So a lot of things been going on with that one, Stephen King's story. And now Pet Sematary Bloodlines will be coming your way on October 6th. It's a prequel. And let's see, The Exorcist Believer floats onto the big screen on October 6th. So it looks like there's a lot of horror and things like that coming our way. Of course, it's October, so it's getting into October anyway, so pretty close. And we're going to be having all those movies coming our way. So get ready for that. And that's it for remake, sequels, and prequels. Coming up next on Screen and Beyond, upcoming new movies. Upcoming new movies, October 2nd, you can look for the horror movie Appendage on Hulu. And that continues on with the the horror theme here, of course. And an action-adventure movie about the Bermuda Triangle called Bermuda. We'll have the director of Snow White as the director. And look for Nicolas Cage to star in Dream Scenario. Now, this one's a comedy for him. And that's it for upcoming new movies. Next on Screen and Beyond, movies and TV on DVD and streaming. Movies and TV on DVD and streaming for All Mankind Season 1 flies on to Blu-ray on November 14th. Yellowjackets Season 2 comes to DVD on October 10th. Haunted Mansion arrives on Blu-ray and DVD on October 17th. And also on October 17th, Rabbit Hole Season 1 with Kiefer Sutherland arrives on Blu-ray and DVD. And that's it for movies and TV on DVD and streaming. Coming up next on Screen and Beyond, it's TV and entertainment time.
Hey everyone, this is Mark Goddard from Lost in Space on Screen and Beyond.
TV and entertainment time. All Rise, the OWN TV show, ends after upcoming season 3B. Now, you know, they split things up here, and you get season 3A, now 3B. And that's the final shows that started on September 16th. And Archer on FX is now into its 14th season, and this is going to be the last one for Archer. And Chucky Season 3 premieres on USA and Sci-Fi on October 4th with Jennifer Tilly and Devon Sawa. Now, Devon was a guest here at On Screen and Beyond in the past, so you can go back and listen to that one with Devon. And that's it for TV and entertainment time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up next on Screen and Beyond, we're going to sit down, if you remember Valerie's Family, All's Fair, Norman Lear Show, and also Ferris Bueller, the TV show, and the movie Multiplicity, and just so many other movies that she was in. Judith Kahn is going to be joining us right here on Screen and Beyond. Today's guest on Screen and Beyond is an actress who we have seen on Broadway in A Little Night Music and on TV shows including Valerie's Family, Doc, All's Fair, and Ferris Bueller, and in films including Stealing Home, Multiplicity, and Analyze This, just to name a few. It's Judith Kahn. Judith, welcome to Screen and Beyond.
Well, thank you so much, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Now, Judith, looking back at your career, you did a lot of different things. Like you say, you were on stage, you were in movies, you were on TV. Was that the ultimate goal of when you wanted to become an actress?
Oh, gee, I'm not sure there was an ultimate goal. I was just so happy that I was able to do what I really knew I always wanted to do. And probably, if truth be told, I never imagined anything beyond musical theater in New York. So so I, yeah, it, everything just sort of, like in, as in life, everything just sort of tumbles into the next thing and you discover that you're having, you're on some sort of unknown trajectory. But no, I don't imagine I fantasized much of anything. I never thought I'd leave New York. So that I got to New York in a show and never thought I'd leave. And I did. Yeah. And then loved every minute that I was in California. Yeah. So
take us back to when you were just a young child. Did you want to be an actress when you were just a little kid? Or how did it develop to the point where you became an actress?
Well, I guess when I was a little kid, I wanted to be an actress. I certainly didn't fantasize or dream of being a chemist, which my father was. It was the only class in high school I had to take in summer school for getting a borderline passing grade, which is very sad. And I feel terrible for my father that he had to endure my bad grades in chemistry. But I was way too chicken in high school, for example, to even do much of anything. I did maybe one play in high school. I was way too humiliated to imagine auditioning for anything. And I didn't study anything in those years. I didn't go to theater camp or take acting classes or anything like that. There wasn't much of anything available that way anyway. But when I carried with me an interest in improvisation when I was in high school, I was singing more than anything because I could be in a choral group and that was less mortifying to stand up and sing. And I auditioned via tape for Boston University, ended up going there as a voice student for 2 years until I dropped out. But I always loved Nichols and May, and I loved listening to English comedy that I could get on vinyl back then. We just simply called them albums. Right. This is 200 years ago. and I just knew that was what I was drawn to. So when I went to college, maybe I'm getting ahead of my own story, but when I went to college, where I was an unremarkable voice student, I'd never really had that kind of voice anyway, you know, sort of a voice major voice. There was a show that had started my sophomore year, I guess it, February 1st, 1968, a show called The Proposition began in Cambridge. It was started by a bunch of exceptional Harvard students, and it was Friday and Saturday nights only. It happened while I was home for Christmas holiday. I had no idea it was coming together at all. And when I came back in the middle of my, you know, after Christmas sophomore year, I picked up a copy of Boston After Dark, which was back then, it was kind of the Village Voice of Boston, and saw this little ad for something called The Proposition. And it said, I think the ad said a comedy musical and comedy review, it was satirical review. Anyway, it spoke to me loud and clear, this teeny tiny ad, and I thought, how did this happen? And I never knew about it. So as I said, they were only performing Friday and Saturday nights, two shows, 8 and 10 each night, but it instantly became the darling of Cambridge. And at that point, the off-Broadway scene in Boston was pretty limited. So it became the sort of darling little smarty show of all these fabulously wonderful, bright people who were doing it. And it was mostly written, like Second City, with a little bit of improvisation, but mostly they wrote it. And I went to the second Friday night, the second week, Friday night performance at 8 o'clock, and just thought to myself, I have to do this. This is me. This is what I've always dreamed of in my head. And because they were so successful, they were expecting to put together, I mean, sold out immediately because it was such a teeny tiny theater and it was so well received. But they immediately started making plans to put together a second company. So they did auditions somewhere in the spring, and I auditioned for it, and I was accepted, and then stopped basically stopped going to class, and even though I was still living in the dorm, I guess, and then it took incompletes for the second half, second semester, and that was that, and came, told my parents, you know, I will figure out a way to be self-supporting, even though at that point it was only paying $5 per show. So that was a solid $20 a week and not enough even 1968 in Cambridge to live. So I immediately got a job and said to my parents, you're off the hook. I get it. I'm totally breaking your hearts, but this is what I got to do. And that's what I did. And the second company never came together, but I was able to fill in some of the actual Harvard students. So the two women who were in the original group, you know, they proceeded with their lives to be smart and terrific. One of them actually kept pursuing acting, but she finished college and at Radcliffe, and life continued on for them. But we also were adding more shows to go to six a week, added Thursday and Sunday. So they really did need people who were, they needed more than just the small group they had to start with. And that was me. I jumped in like crazy on that. Did it for 3 years in Boston. And then we were picked up to open off Broadway. The whole company that was playing together moved down to New York, and we opened off Broadway, and they continued on. They refilled the cast in Cambridge, and that continued on for, I'm not sure how many years later it went on, but it's been gone for quite a long time now. But that's how I got to New York. And then from there, I did it for a year in New York. So those 3 years in Cambridge and the 1 year in New York became my college education, really. Mm-hmm. And then I was totally hooked and thought to myself, well, I guess I can do other things, and did some off Broadway and did a little bit of off Broadway, and then auditioned for and got into the a show called Company, which was Hal Prince and Sondheim, and was cast in that to be a replacement for when they moved the company, the New York company, to London. And then learned a lesson really, really early in show business that you don't count on anything until after you're done with it. Mm-hmm. Because it was a 2 week rehearsal period. There were a bunch of us coming in. I think there were at least five, maybe six people coming in to be replacements in the course of that 2 weeks. So rehearsal and then coming in. But after the first week, Hal Prince called everybody. He had directed Company. He called everybody on stage between matinee and evening. It was right around Christmas time, and said, "I'm sorry to say that we have made a decision, financial decision, that we are going to go to London, but we're not going to keep the New York company open." And so those of us who, you know, were sort of dreaming of this extraordinary opportunity to be in a Sondheim Prince show, that was it. It was over. No more rehearsals, no more anything. Wow. But I went to the Tony Awards that year. That was the year Follies was winning everything, and The Extraordinary Follies, my actual favorite show of all time. And it was a gift to go to the Tony Awards. And I, feeling very, whatever, I don't know, proud of the fact that he might remember me, I remember after when the show was over, going down inside the theater to congratulate Hal Prince, who had just, they just won for, you know, they won for Company, but they also won for Follies. They just won everything. And I said, just, you know, thrilling congratulations and how exciting. And he looked at me and he said, "You know what? I still feel terrible about what happened. We'll work together again. You'll see." And a year later, he made good on that promise or that statement. And they brought me in for a little night music, which really made no sense. I was 23 or 24 years old at the time to play a 12 or 14 year old. I'm not even sure how old they intended that character to be, but they hired me for the original company of Little Night Music. And that was, needless to say, to work directly with Sondheim and Hal Prince, my heroes, was, you know, beyond. So that sort of set me on that path. And then did co-wrote an off-Broadway show, and from there, somebody, a producer person from LA, was in the audience, and they already had a sold pilot called Doc, starring Barnard Hughes and Elizabeth Wilson, who were two really well thought of New York actors, and they said, we're recasting this part, but it's already sold, so would you like to come out to California and be in this show? You could just come do that. And I immediately thought to myself, yeah, of course I'll do that. And that began my career out in California. And I went that was a Mary Tyler Moore Company show. And when that failed after a year, they actually retooled that show and kept Barnard Hughes. And I think Mary Wicks are the only two they kept from that version of the show. But I've had just great fortune. So Grant Tinker phoned up Norman Lear and said, look, I've got this actress we don't have a job for anymore, but I think you'd like her. And then they put Norman... caused me to be in the show All's Fair with Richard Crenna and Bernadette Peters. And then that began that. And Norman then hired me to be a writer. And then, everything sort of fell out after all of that. Not fell out, but fell
right
into place after that. So, yeah, I there was a period of time there where I really just kept working, and I expanded to become a TV writer as well as an actress. And that was handy because I was pretty annoying. I didn't never wanted to do anything I wouldn't want to watch. So I turned away from things. Not that I was being offered a lot, but I knew I couldn't just sort of do whatever. And so being able to write, and I ended up doing some writing, episodic writing for, I guess my first job was I was a staff writer, technically a creative consultant on a show called Fernwood Tonight,
yes,
which was a ridiculously fun show. Martin Mull and Fred Willard, and it was a Norman Lear show, and it was a syndicated spoof of talk shows. It was hilarious, and Martin Mull and the other writers and Fred, of course, because he was so brilliant. They were great, and it was great fun. And and then I ended up doing, I guess I did a guest star thing on it. And then when it turned into America Tonight, sort of a more pretending that the show was nationally syndicated at that point, I did a role on that. And then I was hired by MTM to create a pilot. Yeah, that was what Grant Tinker said, look, if there's anything you want to do, I'd love to support it. And so I said, well, I don't have a million ideas, but I do kind of have an idea here. And I was lucky. I got to shoot the pilot. It didn't sell as a series, but I got to shoot it. So that was really great. And then what happened after that? Oh, yeah. Then Grant said, well, I'm sorry it didn't sell, but what else do you want to do? And I said, well, I'm kind of a one-horse pony. One horse pony?
One horse pony, right?
Is that right?
Yes.
It sounds so weird when you think about it.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't have a lot of ideas for sitcoms, but I for whatever reason, I was not married, had no children, but loved children's books, little children's books, and had a book that wasn't really a children's book called How to Eat Like a Child. Julia Efron wrote it, and it was kind of about childhood, but not really directed towards kids. But anyway, it was in my group of books that I had, and I thought, you know, I said I to Grant, I feel like this could be a musical. And I don't know if that interests you, but I think I know who I could bring in on this, and I can adapt it, the book, and blah, blah, blah. And there was something starting at NBC right about then called Project Peacock. And it was Sunday night shows at 7 o'clock. They did a wide variety of family-oriented fare. And so the idea for How to Eat Like a Child as a musical fit very well into that concept of shows. And I hired John Forster, whom I knew from The Proposition as well as real life. And And he wrote the book and lyrics, and I did the adaptation of Delia's book. She gave permission for it. And we had, it was all children except for Dick Van Dyke. He was the one adult in it. And, you know, it was a remarkable experience, obviously. And then John had the brilliant notion to say, look, we've got this book, we've got these songs, and there's always need in children's theater for fresh kind of stuff. If we remove the adult character, the Dick Van Dyke character, I think this could have a life in children's theater. Delia and I immediately agreed because that sounded like a great idea. And all these years later, if you YouTube it, you can see it's been done all over the world. And I just went to see it last spring in New Jersey, where I live most of the time. So that was great, my one and only experience doing something like that.
So you got to work with Dick Van Dyke?
I hired him and worked with him, yes.
Wow. Was he as nice as he seems to be?
Yes, yes. As was Mary Tyler Moore, I did a season with her on her absolutely ill-fated variety show that was one of the most hilarious failures in television because who was in it? But I'm asked sometimes what Mary was like, and she was exactly who you wanted her to be, as was Dick Van Dyke. They were just wonderful. Dick, I imagine, still is. I haven't seen him since, like a child, but the fact that he's still dancing and functioning well is amazing. Quite something. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. Now, what about you? Wrote an episode of Moonlighting?
I did.
That was such a fast-paced show. I mean, the dialogue alone, you must have had to write an amazing amount because it just seemed to move so quickly with all the speaking that they had.
Yeah, it would be great if I remembered any of that, but I don't really. What I do remember was that I was able to be hired for that because I had written two episodes of St. Elsewhere.
Oh.
And so that brought that St. Elsewhere. It was Bruce Paltrow, who is in fact was Gwyneth's father. And my office, when I was writing my pilot for MTM, his office was right next to mine. They were doing the show White Shadow, and I got to know him. And then in the course of that year, he was the one that sort of bumped me from writing comedy in Fernwood Tonight to being offered a 1-hour show, which was a big jump for me. That was, there was nothing in life that had prepared me for that shift. But he was one of those guys who gave a lot of people a lot of great opportunities, and I was one of them.
Yeah.
So I guess I don't remember exactly how Moonlighting happened or who would have precisely called me for that. But the joke of that was I wrote a script and it was accepted. And then they had a scheduling issue with their set. And they phoned me up and they said, all right, look, we're going to give you full credit for the episode because that was a very important way of how you earned a living, of course. But he said, we have to change. We're doing a page one rewrite for every part of it because we have to use this train set that we have. And I hadn't written it for a train set. That was never a stipulation. They didn't know it until they fell behind, I guess, in their production. So I actually got credit for a script I didn't write, and I'm not sure they ever did the one I did write. I don't think so. I don't think it worked like that. TV is a mysterious business. So.
Hi, this is Meatloaf, and I am on Screen and Beyond.
Now you worked, you mentioned Norman Lear and all the different people that you've worked for, but one of the classic shows that you were on, you were on All in the Family, but you were on Sesame Street, right?
I did a voice character, a cartoon voice character, a character named Thelma Thumb, that John Cordy, the wonderful director, who passed in the last couple of years, he was a great, wonderful director and innovator, and he worked in Marin County. Hmm. And if you look up, well, Thelma Thumb was the character I did for Sesame Street, but I did another bit of animation voice work for him in a in a feature that is called Twice Upon a Time, which is kind of an animation classic because of the method of, and I'm going to blank on the name, it's, I want to say Luminaire, but I don't think that's right. It was a very specific kind of tissue paper animation that they did. And he hired a bunch of improvisational people to do the voices. He wasn't himself a terribly funny type Second City-ish person, but he understood and respected and loved comedy. So he brought in a bunch of us to sort of play with the script they had. And it was great because I got to, as I had with Thelma Thumb, I got to go up about once a month up to Marin, you know, up to San Francisco for the weekend and take the ferry over to do voice work with him and some other people, some of the other actors. But yeah, you don't see my face on any old Sesame Streets, but yeah. I was...
You've part of the legacy of it. I mean,
I guess so.
Yeah.
I guess so.
Yeah. Now, you worked with Valerie Harper, and Valerie actually was a guest on the show quite a few years ago. It was kind of like 2 days after we did the interview was when she announced that she had, you know, her problem, her disease. And, she was just wonderful. Amazing that how she just kept going.
Oh, she was wonderful. I loved her. That show went through its own trauma when it bumped her. It was horrible. The show I worked on was called Simply Valerie.
Right.
And there was some kind of, after I was on the following year, I guess, and during the hiatus time, there was some kind of big brouhaha, and the producers pushed her off her own show, and they changed the name of the show to the Hogan Family, because her character was Valerie Hogan. So they kept her husband, and Jason Bateman was one of the kids.
Yes.
And I'm not remembering the other boy's name, but I played her neighbor. I did, I think, 10 episodes with her, and she was great. She was generous. She was funny. She was caring. She was great. I couldn't imagine what on earth they, you know, found it necessary to remove her from her show, but it was horrible.
Yeah.
And I stood on her side. So when it became a lawsuit, which was inevitable, I was on her side.
Yeah.
She was a wonderful girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you also worked in Multiplicity with Michael Keaton, but you had already worked with him years ago before that, right? On was it All's Fair? Yeah, he was on.
Yeah, that's where we met. We met on All's Fair, and we also did a voiceover together on a show called Maud, where I can't remember. We had a mutual friend who was producing the show, and he just brought us in to do some voiceovers for one episode. And then Michael and I, what else did we do? We did the Mary Variety Show, which was so horrible, poor thing. He and David Letterman were on that, and in the great miscasting of all time, putting David Letterman where he had to actually pretend to dance. That was, you know, the end of his life. But Michael, what else? I don't know that we acted in anything else together. I don't know. We were friends, and so I'm exceedingly proud of the actor he has become. He's extraordinary. So, but I'm trying to, I don't remember if I worked on anything else with him. I can't remember. You probably know better than me. Yeah. You probably have my resume in front of you.
Yes, I do. I have to admit it. but with all the things that you've done, stage, acting, TV shows, movies, whatever, is there any particular show that is most, you know, in your heart that you enjoyed working on?
I think probably I can answer that. That would generally be an impossible question because every experience is so different. But probably my most satisfying acting experience was the least expected. Fernwood Tonight was done around exactly the same time as a show called Mary Hartman, which was another Norman Lear syndicated comedy show. And when Louise Lasser left after the first and only year of Mary Hartman, Norman kept the show going and we kept everybody in it except for the Louise Lasser Mary Hartman title character, and brought in Shelley Fabre and me to play sisters, and kept the show going for another year. And I had the same agent at that point as a wonderful actress named Marion Mercer, really fabulous, wonderful actress. And I remember thinking, why, I've just done these two network shows. It seems, I'm such a snot. I thought, why would I go backwards and do a syndicated comedy show? And Marion Mercer, I guess our mutual agent had her call me, and she said, you can do whatever you think is right for you, but I'm here to tell you, this is the greatest job I've ever had. I love this job. Mm. And I listened to her because I admired her so much. And I thought, you know, when somebody tells you something that extensively, meaningfully, and passionately, and I knew who the other people were on the Mary Hartman show. I knew Dabney Coleman just some of the other Mary Kay. Yes. Anyway, I knew how talented the group was, and I had loved Mary Hartman so much, and the producers were so great, Eugenie Ross Lemming and Brad Buckner, and they were old Second City people. I knew how good the work was. And so I went in and auditioned, I don't remember, but I took the job. And that was, without doubt, the most fun I've ever had and the most challenging, because it was shot like a soap opera. It was a comedy soap opera. So back in the day, before there was scripts emailed to you, it was all couriers would come to your house at night and drop off the rewritten script for the next day. You came in the morning and rehearsed, shot in the afternoon, went home, and that night the script for the next day came in. So it was really being on your toes. At that point, I could memorize things quickly. I don't think I can memorize my children's name at this point, but but you know, it was so funny, and they were so gracious and giving comedically, and the cast was so incredibly talented. The writing was so great. The direction was great, and it was just the most fun I've ever had. I've had other fantastic experiences on the Mary Variety Show, which was simply called Mary. Mm-hmm. I had been hired as a writer before I got hired to be on it. And hint, hint, I knew it wasn't a very good show, but I was writing with two brilliant women. We kind of found each other as the show was moving through, and that was Meryl Marco and Valerie Bromfield. And we had the most fun either being a threesome or separate or two of us. We just had a blast writing. So that, from a writing point of view, that was probably my second favorite thing, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned Second City a couple of times. You actually ended up writing for Second City or SCTV for a few episodes, writing for these incredibly talented actors, comedians, I should say. Was that daunting?
Well, I would have, again, you know, if anything had have been taken of mine, it would have been. At that point in time, Andrew Alexander owned Second City, and he's the one who hired me for 6 weeks. At that point, they had been doing SCTV for a million years, and they were very insular group. They really had their stuff. They knew what they wanted for themselves, and they wrote it for themselves. And I had an idea that I still think is quite funny. It was the only thing I really pushed, and the only person who even vaguely listened was Eugene Levy. But even he, God bless him, it just wasn't going to happen. So I was hired for 6 weeks, but I didn't get anything on, and it was not a good fit. It just probably wasn't.
So is that one of those things with, like, when I watched Mrs. Maisel, and is it just the writers are sitting in a room, they're throwing things around, see what sticks on the wall and see what goes? Is that really how it goes?
Well, I don't know. When they were at their heyday, I don't quite, I mean, I could ask because we're still great friends with all those folks, but I don't really know what their process was. That wasn't the process for me. I was being brought in as a solo person, so I was never in a writer's room or anything like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Huh, interesting. Yeah. That's why it's fun to talk to people and find out, what really goes on behind the scenes that we don't see,
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's always lots, for sure. And I learn a lot when I talk to friends about what's going on in myself, in shows, even now. Because we're sort of paying close attention to Only Murders because we're good friends with Marty. I mean, everybody who's ever known him is good friends with him, but with our good friend Andrea Martin, and who's an old SCTV person.
Yes, yeah.
She just did three episodes of this new season. And, so it's quite interesting to hear about that show and the way they're proceeding. It's all fascinating and amazing, because getting anything done these days is so hard. The limitations and you think with so much being produced there'd be great stuff to do, but I think it's a lot of volume and not a lot of quality most of the time.
Yeah. So Judith, I want to finish up with one final question.
Yeah.
Taking us away from all the things, your writing, your stage work, your TV and movies, but when you sit back and relax, what are you watching on TV and movies? What are your favorite TV shows and movies today and when you were growing up?
Oh, well, today, it's pretty standard. I think one of the best shows ever written for television is Succession. So we couldn't wait week to week to be able to watch that. It's extraordinary writing, extraordinary acting, extraordinary direction, extraordinary everything. It's just like unbelievably good, like Shakespeare for our time, Shakespearean anyway. So that we also recently watched The Bear. That was filled with anxiety, but some extraordinary episodes, and a friend's daughter on the second season of it. That makes it fun. And, I guess I like, I don't watch, it's amazing how much I've not seen, because I don't generally sit around and watch TV. I can't even tell you what the network shows are. And streaming, just limited, because we have one child who is so not a TV watcher, and he says, why would I commit 18 hours or 20 hours to something when I can watch a classic film on the Criterion Channel for 2 hours and see something really amazing. So when we're not watching sports or we're not catching up on news, which we try to watch less of because it's so dramatically unhappy.
Depressing.
Oh my God. I guess there's the, those two shows are the, and Only Murders, of course, I'm trying to watch. Those are the only shows that come to mind for things I'm watching now. And back in the day, I think I'm trying to remember, I probably watched medical shows. I probably loved all that stuff.
Yes.
Probably when I was a child, I probably would have told you that I wanted to live in those sitcoms where everybody seemed so happy. Father Knows Best. I thought, why? I remember being horrified to discover that he'd had an alcohol problem and that I wasn't really seeing the real person.
Right.
I think back, way back, I was watching variety shows, and I mean, everybody was, because you know, they were on all the time. Ed Sullivan and Carol Burnett and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So whatever my family watched, my father loved Omnibus on Sunday morning. So, yeah, and Sunday morning on CBS is always a great show. When I remember to record that and watch that, that's a great show to see.
Yes.
Well, that's about it, probably.
Well, Judas, I cannot thank you enough for agreeing to share some of your story with us, and I thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, thank you for being interested. I really appreciate it. It's awfully nice of you.
And a big shout out to Judith Kahn for joining us here at On Screen and Beyond. I want to thank her so much for taking the time to talk to us. And we've got all kinds of shows that she was on. I'm not sure if you can see some of these shows on streaming or not. I didn't look to see. But some of the movies you can. I'm sure Multiplicity is out there, and then some of the other ones that she was in. And so interesting to hear her story. Thank you so much. Well, we are moving into October pretty soon here. It's getting right up to that time. Of course, it's Halloween time and everything. And it's going to be a lot of, like I had said earlier, a lot of horror movies coming our way. So get ready to get scared. And we'll have I'm hoping to try to get a end of October themed show on, about horror or something like that. But I'm working on that. I'm not sure if it's going to happen. I had somebody and something dropped on that, so we couldn't get them on. But I'm still working on trying to get somebody for that. So hopefully I'll have something special for you. Anyways, if you have a suggestion, you can email it to me at feedback@onscreenandbeyond.com. And I love hearing from you, whether you're making a suggestion or not. You know, you don't have to do that to make a suggestion. You can just email me. Love hearing from you. And I thank you so much for taking the time. We are on the socials, and if you're out there on the socials, whether it be, what is it? Is it Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it? We're on there. And also Instagram. That's the one we put things up first on. And also on Facebook, we're there and everything. So, if you want to check us out on those, we'd appreciate that. And I hope you'll follow us. And I'm hoping to get more active on those, but things are just so busy. It's just trying to get guests here at On Screen and Beyond. So it's a lot of fun doing that, though. And I hope you'll enjoy all the shows that we have. Listen to all of our past episodes. We've got so many of them, and some amazing people, just hearing their stories and telling about the shows and movies and songs they sang and everything else. It's a lot of fun. So that's it. That's a wrap for this episode of On Screen and Beyond. So until next time, when we once again take you on screen and beyond, I'm Brian Zemirak. Take care.